Imagine that you are a member of a pastor-seeking committee that is interviewing a candidate. The man is asked to describe his involvement in ministry up to this point. And this is what he has to say. He has worked with several churches that turned out to be problematic. In one, there was a difficult disciplinary issue that resulted in a church split. In another, a doctrinal stand made for an uphill battle, and he was eventually shown the door. A third church actually folded while he was there. This guy seems to have a knack for accepting calls in churches that are small and not in demographically promising locations. He's had to work part-time at other jobs while pastoring, and his family's never really had much of anything materially. The man also has a disability that makes it a challenge to preach at times. He seems to know the scriptures, but is somewhat soft-spoken and does not exactly overwhelm you with personality. It seems that his ministry has been more about hardship than resounding success in terms of numbers, anyway. And he's hardly a spring chicken anymore. Does this candidate remain in the mix as you consider who the Lord wants to pastor your church? If you are willing to probe further into this man's character and family and giftedness, then I think that you are among the very few who would do so. For most people looking for a pastor, I believe that this man would not get a second look. He simply does not have the credentials that would portend success. It is ironic that such a man would have a very hard time finding a church to pastor today, because his resume looks so much like the one that the Apostle Paul presents to us in our passage for tonight. Paul is feeling the sting of the preference that the Corinthians were showing for his aggressive and charismatic rivals. Against his own inclinations, Paul has decided that he will also boast about his qualifications for leadership. He's proposing to be bold himself, as he says in verse 21. The idea, bold, is to dare to do something. It was used in chapter 10, verse 12, when Paul said that he was not bold to class or compare himself with those who were commending themselves. Now he is being bold to declare his own credentials. Is Paul contradicting himself? After all, this is an issue that goes back at least as far as chapter 3. Paul said back then that he did not need letters of commendation such as the ones the pseudo-apostles were waving around and saying, "See how great we are." He had the testimony of lives changed through his teaching and example to support his authority. Is Paul now going back on all of that and saying, "Well, I guess I'm just going to have to fight fire with fire"? No, I don't think so. He is seeming to go insane, as he states, in presenting his own credentials. He's saying, "This is just completely out there that I'm doing this. in a way that is somewhat similar to what these others have done. But as we get into what those credentials are, well, we see what Paul is doing. What he is offering the church is a list very different from anything his opponents would dream of coming up with. In fact, this is their nightmare. While the super apostles boasted of eloquence and power and nonstop success, Paul gives a litany of sacrifice. When a person is boasting about his weaknesses, as Paul declares in verse 30, is he really boasting? No. The true boldness of Paul is that he is willing to put his hardships out there as credentials and let the Spirit of God take it from there. The Corinthians would either see that Paul was what a church truly needs, or they would not. For those reading this passage tonight, and wherever it's read in the church today, the question is, what impresses us? What impresses us? Is it the accomplishments that a man can boast of? Oh yeah, you bring me in here and in 5 years, this is the way it's going to be, and it's going to be amazing. And you're going to see all this growth, and you're going to see all this more money coming in, and we'll have a building program going on. You just wait and see. Is that what impresses us? Or is it the self-denial that has been displayed for the sake of Christ? The first of Paul's credentials are laid out in verse 22, and we can deal with them quickly. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. Here Paul is simply saying that none of his opponents could outdo him when it came to being a fervent Jew. One truth that then comes out of this verse is that the super apostles were Jews. He's obviously responding to what his opponents were boasting about. So they were Jews, and this fact was gaining them a lot of credibility in the church. They were probably also downplaying Paul's heritage, perhaps pointing out that he was born in Tarsus, which was outside of Israel proper. In some way, perhaps, they were casting aspersions upon his background. It is somewhat of a question as to why these particular credentials were so important in a Gentile location such as Corinth. But we know that this church, like many, perhaps most of the others, started with preaching in the synagogue. We know that from the book of Acts. Started with preaching in the synagogue. At least initially, you know, Jewish concerns were strong. The basis of the church typically were Jews that were converted out of the synagogue. Then Paul would get kicked out, and then they'd go and continue on with the Gentiles. Gentile converts rightly respected the fact that Christ came from the Jews, so there could be a strong element of that still in this church, despite its location. But that heritage was being given too much weight here. Paul was not saying that he should be respected simply because he was a Jew. He was not saying, hey, that should just count for everything, but he was not going to be misrepresented either. It is possible that we are to see nuances in the terms Hebrew, Israelite, and seed, literally, of Abraham here, that he's saying slightly different things by choosing those terms. They might speak to the cultural, national, and theological aspects of being a Jew. whatever the case, Paul was all of it and more. Be ridiculous for somebody to try to out-Jew Paul. As we read in Philippians, Paul was a Hebrew of Hebrews. He was a full-blooded member of the tribe of Benjamin. He'd been a Pharisee. He'd been trained in Jerusalem under Gamaliel. As he says in Galatians, he was exceeding all of his contemporaries in his zeal for ancestral traditions. Once Paul realized through the Damascus Road experience that his zeal had been without knowledge, he had been acting as a true Jew throughout his ministry. And we see how he lived as a believing Jew through the various things he does in Acts, going to the temple and fasting and taking vows and all of that. There was therefore no shortcoming in this area with which to attack Paul. He just takes that right off the board. But it is in verses 23 through 27 and 32 and 33 that Paul gives us the heart of his credentials. This is where we're going to spend most of our time tonight. Did the super apostles put themselves forward as servants of Christ? Even taking that identity at face value, which Paul did not, we've already seen who they were servants of, but even to take that at face value, Paul says, I am much more so. Now that is something that we would say of ourselves only in direst need, right? I am much more of a servant of Christ than these other people. You would have to be basically in a situation like what would Paul was here, you know, in to say something like that. And you would want to have plenty of support for that contention. And both of those applied to this particular situation. Here, servant of Christ seems to have a somewhat specific meaning as an official representative of the Messiah. But Paul is zeroing in on the idea of service. What does that actually involve? It certainly does not involve what he had listed in verse 20, which we covered last week. These were the exploits of the false apostles, devouring, taking advantage, hitting people in the face, and so forth. Real service involves what Paul was now going to describe. And what he describes is suffering. What would happen, I wonder, if after the gospel message was given to unbelievers, wherever in the church, wherever the gospel is still given. What if after that we presented these verses as a glimpse of what following Jesus could be like? What if the church talked a lot about labors and imprisonment and beatings and dangers and hunger and exposure to the elements? What if we talked about that as, yeah, that could be a very normal part of living out your faith in Christ? Now that would be talking as if insane. That won't attract too many to the next church service, will it? That won't get very many dollars into the offering plate. That would only invite the scorn of the super apostles. But this was the life to which Paul was called. And in its general thrust, it's the life to which we are called. This is really important tonight, that you weigh this for your own life. If any man would be my disciple, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. That's what Jesus said, and Paul is just describing that a little more fully. This wasn't Paul doing something crazy on his own. You know, he just kind of went wild, kind of got off the reservation in regards to being a Christian. This was Paul sharing in the fellowship of Christ's sufferings. And there was joy in it, just as Jesus endured persecution and the cross for the joy that was set before him. This wasn't a drudgery to Paul, something that he just couldn't stand doing, thought he really got, you know, the short end of the stick in life. Do not think that Paul would have had it any other way. His life was counting for the Lord in the most amazing way because of the suffering. But we can't skirt around the details all the same. This really happened to Paul. And similar things have been happening ever since to God's people. This is strange to us, but it's not strange to God and what he has witnessed in his people over the centuries. A denial of hardship as the normal Christian life is a denial of what the Bible says being a Christian is like. Paul was continually laboring, he says, working to the point of exhaustion for the spiritual good of others. And rather than being celebrated for his efforts, Paul spent a lot of time in prison. We would say that this was amazing if he was always being cheered, you know, and told how wonderful he was. And everybody was just falling all over themselves trying to do, you know, things for him. But he made these sacrifices and got sent to prison for it. You know, we start to get the picture here that there is a lot that Paul dealt with that we don't know about from Acts, that we don't know about from his letters. We know of only one time in jail for him before this point in his life. It's the one in Philippi, you know, famous Philippian jailer and all of that. We know about that. But he uses the plural here at this point in his life, prisons. We know of several other stints after this letter, including a long one in Caesarea, where he went through various trials under governors and so forth, and then one in Rome. We believe he was released from that, but then ended up back in prison in Rome at the end of his life before he was executed. Now, some of these episodes might have been more like what we would call house arrest. But Clement, a very early church father, you could call him, stated that Paul had been in prison seven times. And he was pretty close to the life of Paul. That he had been in prison seven times. And, you know, we only know for sure of three of them from the scriptures. If you want to call, you know, at least that first one in Rome, a little more like house arrest, whether that would count as a prison, you know, I don't know exactly. But there was a lot going on that we don't know of. And what's remarkable is that in each instance that we do know of, Paul continued to evangelize and to minister to believers while he was incarcerated. He kept on doing what had got him into jail in the first place. Five times up to this point, Paul had been given 39 lashes with a whip as punishment. Jewish law spoke of 40 lashes. So the practice was to give one less in case the scourger miscounted. You know, you really shouldn't do 41. But, you know, give him a good strong 39 anyway. None of these five instances are mentioned in Acts. Five up to this point in his life. None mentioned. This took place in the synagogues. That's where they had these whippings. So we can surmise that it happened in places like Damascus and Pisidian Antioch and Iconium and maybe even Corinth. That during his journeys as he went to the synagogue, this was their final, you know, God be with you on his way out, have 39 lashes. We don't like what you're preaching. Perhaps it was so common that Luke just didn't bother to record it. Everybody just kind of knew. This guy was getting beaten on. The beatings with rods that we read about here, well, that was conducted by the Romans. Now, they had a different method. We'll get the rods going on you. We know that this happened in Philippi before he went into the jail there. But we can only guess at the other two that it happened up again to this point. So that's eight if you put them together. There was a stoning that took place in Lystra. You can add that. And it seems that only God's miraculous working prevented death in that incident. Strange incident. Everybody thinks he's dead and he gets up and, you know, he's alive. We can only imagine what Paul's back looked like after all of this. Hundreds of blows. Those stripes were the real mark of his authority. No wonder that he told the Galatians not to cause trouble for him, for he bore the brand marks of Jesus. We don't know of these three shipwrecks. Three shipwrecks! But we do know of one after this time, when he was on his way to Rome from one prison to another. One time, Paul says he clung to wreckage for 24 hours before being rescued. You would think that Paul might have been scared off of traveling around to the churches, you know, after these kinds of experiences. But the Lord kept delivering him, so he kept on going. We have the constant dangers of verse 26. Boy, you read through that, just as you were listening to Nathan read through that verse. Dangers, dangers, dangers. You read through it and you realize Paul never felt safe in earthly terms. Never. He could never really relax in the way that, you know, we think of, you know, just whatever, getting home after a day of work and just, you know, no threats, no problems. Everywhere he went, difficulties were lurking. If he was in the city, people were trying to persecute him. If he was in the churches, false brethren were opposing him, trying to undermine him. That was going on right here. If he was out in the country, he had robbers and animals and weather and natural obstacles to contend with. Yes, we know he was secure in his salvation and in the ultimate protection of God. But cozy times with family and friends, you know, safe and secure from all alarms, as the hymn goes, those times were few and far between for Paul. There weren't a lot of carefree evenings drinking hot chocolate by the fire. When I think of the reaction of many Christians to taking the slightest risk for the Lord, When I think of how reluctant we are to give up any of our comforts, I tell you, it almost makes me sick. Our perspective is so out of whack. What we think we're owed. You know, because we've been so wonderful to believe in Jesus and get to church fairly regularly or something. This guy couldn't sleep. He probably had to keep strange hours, you know, meeting people whenever they could get to him from, you know, wherever they were coming from, working on tents at night to support himself and others, up thinking about the needs of the church. Undoubtedly, physical pain kept him from sleeping. I mean, you know, you think we've got some arthritis problems and so forth. What did this guy have going on in his body after all he'd been through? Are you kidding? He went hungry and thirsty, either because of poverty or because he couldn't get food wherever he happened to be. We don't know much about true hunger, do we? Paul was not typically warmly clad. Just going over to 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 11, another verse about this. He says, to this present hour, I mean, he's talking about up to right now in my ministry, we are both hungry and thirsty and are poorly clothed and roughly treated and are homeless. How's that for a resume? Imagine traveling through mountains as he did in winter, and you've got a few rags for clothes. Paul had to ask Timothy to bring him a cloak at the end of his life. Here, he's about to be executed, but he was still freezing to death in prison. Can you please bring me the cloak? And then we have this interesting detail added in verses 32 and 33. After the generalizations that Paul has been making, he suddenly gets very specific here. It's kind of like, that kind of is weird. It kind of comes almost out of nowhere. Oh yeah, here's one thing. Why bring up his escape from Damascus in the midst of all of this? Well, it certainly highlights the constant danger. Fits in with that idea. But the main idea here is the humiliation. It's the weakness that was involved constantly in his ministry. Paul had to be let down from a window in a basket. That's not the picture of manliness to me. That's not particularly triumphant. But it's the kind of thing that Paul was willing to endure to continue to serve the Lord. Got to crawl in this basket and, you know, make this weird escape, bumping down along the wall down to the ground. Well, this passage was written when Paul still had miles to go in ministry. You know, this was not, oh, and praise the Lord, that's all over with. Can you believe what I had to go through? But at least now, you know, things are going to be a lot easier. No. There was a lot more after this. We haven't even got to arrest in Jerusalem and the trials in Caesarea and what went on in Rome and then what went on in the intervening years, etc. I wonder how many times people told Paul that, you know, he needed to back off a bit. He needed to slow down. Wasn't the Lord trying to tell him something? I mean, it really shouldn't be this hard, right? Use some common sense, Paul. How careful we should be to tell people to leave a ministry because there are difficulties. Because it seems that it puts them in danger. Danger was Paul's middle name. Well, we need to consider the third aspect of Paul's credentials quickly. We find the mental pressures that he dealt with in verses 28 and 29. Apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? Paul had a lot of responsibility. That's what wears you down more than anything. It's the responsibility. I get tired of being the person who has to oversee a marriage and a family and a church and whatever else. That's nothing compared to what was on Paul's plate. Here, he's pulling his hair over the Corinthians. Think of the emotional investment that just these two letters that we have represent. You're in 1 Corinthians, ladies. We've been in 2 Corinthians. Just think of what all had to be going on in Paul just with this one church. Now add the Thessalonians. How were they doing with their confusion over the end times? Were people back to work there instead of sponging off of other people, saying it doesn't matter because the Lord's about to come back? Add the Galatians. Were the Judaizers still gaining ground there? Was all the work in that area for naught because of this false gospel? How were the Philippians holding up against persecution? On and on it went. Praying, strategizing, sending counsel. Do you think these are the only letters that Paul ever wrote? Paul woke up every day wondering, what's going on with my converts, with my disciples? Think of all the individual names in the letters that we have from Paul. It's just the tip of the iceberg. Greet this person, greet that person, tell this person that, whatever. We can readily understand why Paul remains single. Can you imagine this as a married man? The load of care was heavy enough. Without a family to watch over. Paul was burning inside, he writes. That's the literal Greek of intense concern. He was always burning. When he wrote to the Roman church about weeping with those who weep and rejoicing with those who rejoice, Paul lived that. That tight connection that he had to Christ's body, that made him vulnerable, didn't it? Yeah, getting into other people's lives, that many other people's lives, being available to them, caring about them, that makes you vulnerable emotionally, mentally. Some avoid that potential drain. They sense the sacrifice that would be involved there. No way. I'm not getting pulled into that. But Paul embraced that aspect of suffering as well as the others, knowing that the full and satisfying life only comes when you allow yourself to have such concerns. trying to protect himself from mental stress would only lead to loneliness and fruitlessness and depression, as it always does. You try and, you know, isolate yourself, maybe, so I'm not going to be vulnerable to getting, you know, sucked into other people's problems and so forth. Now you find out that you end up in a bad place. How about us? Do the tremors that others are experiencing register on your spiritual Richter scale? Well, I wonder what the Corinthians did when they had finished reading through these credentials. What Paul is putting forth as his qualifications to be listened to be obeyed, as opposed to his opponents. Did they read the, okay, you know, shipwreck, lashings, in prison, you know, danger, so forth, and then, you know, turn to the super apostles and say, and you've got chirp. Was there an attempt at a blustering response? Well, you don't have to be involved in, you know, all those kinds of things. What a stark contrast. You can follow the beautiful people to Never Never Land, or you can follow the ragged Paul and his companions into sacrificial service. What's it going to be? I'm sure that most were convicted by the Spirit of who was telling and living the truth here. The question tonight, however, is what do we think of Paul? What do we think of this? Did he endure all of that needlessly? Was he indeed a fool who missed out on the American dream? Couldn't he see that wasn't going to get him anywhere here? As far as material things, should we turn away embarrassed at this unseemly masochism? Couldn't he have done just as good a job sending orders out from some secret lair where he kept safe and had people attending to him? No. This embracing of hardship is how you become the most influential person in history other than Jesus himself. That's it right there. That's the recipe. That's the resume for having the greatest spiritual impact of any human being that wasn't God. Yes, Paul had his calling. I understand that. This was a unique calling. We need not be intimidated by it, nor do we have to think that we need to imitate it. Not that we could, but we don't think that we need to for God to be happy with us. God is in charge of your spiritual growth. But it is, I believe, important how you view these verses. Do they give you new respect for Paul's teachings and his authority as a person to give you the truth for your life? Is this model of sacrifice something that you desire to attain to, whatever that might mean exactly in your context? Or is this something to forget as soon as possible in your scramble for ease and pleasure on this earth? How does this fit into your understanding of a spiritual person? Do you want pastors who have the profile of a Paul or of the super apostles? The fact is that Paul also had powerful supernatural experiences that blew away anything that the false teachers had ever come up with. We will see that next week. But can we not see why Paul was allowed some extraordinary visions and revelations from the Lord? He was given great encouragements for enduring great trials. So many want the exaltation without the humiliation. The privileges without the responsibility. The fruit without the labor. But that's not the way that God works. Like Paul, may we all learn to boast of our weaknesses. Those turn out to be the credentials that are approved by God. Let's pray.